Hey everyone, I'm trying to get to TwitchCon 2018 this year, but I need your help. How, you may be asking? Well, every little bit counts, and we're trying to offset the cost of travel and accommodations through donations on our Twitch channel. So for the next month, we have a goal of $1,000 that we're trying to hit. If you can, head on over to donate.gamertagradio.com to support, and hopefully I'll see you at TwitchCon.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005. You're listening to Gamertag Radio with your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, welcome to Gamertag Radio episode 799. Pete, we're about to hit our 800th episode later this week, man. Thank you everyone for listening to GTR, and this is your host Danny, and also we have Pete in the house here, man. What's up, Pete?
What's up? Yeah, man, it's crazy. 800 episodes. Who would have thought that, you know, this little fledgling cassette tape podcast yeah. about Phantasy Star mm-hmm. Online would have exploded, and you'd be sitting here 800 episodes in. Like 13 crazy, years later, man.
crazy.
Did you think in your wildest dreams, and I'm not trying to say that like we've made it, we're like the Tesla of podcasts, right? But did you ever think back in the early 2000s that you would be sitting here in 2018, at the tail end of 2018, about to tip over the 800 episode mark? And you know, that's in and of itself quite an achievement. If you look at the grand scheme of things, if you look at all the other podcasts out there, the Joe Rogan Experience, 99% Invisible, and all the other shows that you can find on all your other podcast directories. Did you ever think that you would be sitting here at 800?
Never in a million years, man. Actually, we're way ahead of 800, because if you count all the years of E3, a lot of those episodes didn't even have no numbers. It was just like quick interviews, quick episodes, you know? So I think we're like way over 1,000. I just don't know how many. I lost count. But nah, man, I never thought in a million years that I was still going to continue with the show. And actually, like, I'm having a blast though, man. It's still exciting to record with you guys and travel and do interviews and share that content to like our audience. Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty good, man. I love it, man. And it's the crazy part, Pete. Today is International Podcast Day.
Yep.
Which is crazy weird too, that we're about to hit 800 and this is International Podcast Day, man. So that's pretty cool. Now, I was going to ask you, was there any podcast that you were like, wow, this is good before? I mean, I know you're gonna mention GTR, but was there any other shows that you want to like to recommend here on this episode for people to check out?
I mean, we know this already because you and I have already spoken about this. You actually introduced me to podcasts, right? Like when I was on episode 95 back in 2006, 2007. I didn't know what a podcast was. It wasn't something that was on my radar. At that point, I was still listening to like talk radio, sports radio on the AM dial, right? So like Dan Le Batard, before his show was even on ESPN, he was on 790. Even before that, the precursors of that, I listened to like Neil Rogers, 560 AM down here in South Florida, who eventually went on to national acclaim before passing away in the early 2000s. And that's who I used to listen to back in like the 90s. It was like I would listen to AM radio on the way to and from work or just driving around with friends. But it wasn't until I became a part of GTR, not just as, you know, staff, but prior to when like you interviewed me, I had no idea what podcasts were, and I never took to it. And even 13 years later here at GTR with you now in Paris, I still don't listen to podcasts on the regular. The only time I'll listen to them is when I have long trips, because I can download them and I can listen to them as background noise, and you know, I can actually absorb them. I mean, there's a few occasional shows that pop up on my radar. I do have some that are subscribed so that I can always listen to them on the go when necessary, when I need to or when I want to. Waypoint Radio, 99% Invisible with Robin Mars. Obviously this show, things like that. Yeah. Just You know, it that list of shows is spot on me. Those things ebb and flow with what's going on, what's hot. If it hits a topic, if I see it pop up in my podcast feed, like I used to sub to the Joe Rogan Experience, but it got really repetitive in a sense. And sometimes those 3-hour podcasts just don't do it for me. I know Keon would probably love those because he, you know, he's a truck driver, but I can't do long form 3-hour, you know, podcasts. I mean, there's one that Paris even, you know, linked me to. His name is Dan, but he does like these 5-6-7-hour historical, podcasts. And I just can't do that. You know, those are probably perfect for, you know, being on a trip, like on an airplane and just listening to like 8 hours of audio. I just can't do that though. I have too much ADD and short-term memory to sit there through an 8-hour experience.
But yeah, personally, I just love shows that either 40 minutes long, an hour. I like that a lot because I listen to a lot of like political podcasts, and those, like the ones that I listen to, some of them is either recorded from the TV, right? Mm-hmm. Like they'll record from the show and then removing all the ads and everything. Then it goes from like an hour to like 45, 44 minutes or so. I love those because those are like, to me, those are quick and straight to the point.
Right.
I just don't like the long podcasts. I know there's a lot of other folks that just love that type of content. To me, like when I release an episode of GTR, actually 2 episodes every week, make sure to subscribe. I think that it gets the listener like, oh man, I can't wait for the next episode. It gets them like amped up for the next content to release, you know? So, you know, once in a while we'll do the long episodes. Those are like the rare ones. And the reason why I leave it there is because of the conversation that we have. You know what I'm saying? It's great. I don't feel like taking it off. I just leave it to the you leave it there to the podcast, man. You know what I'm saying? So that I just want to say that, man. Look, for those that are listening right now or watching this on Twitch, make sure to share this, the podcast with your friends and family members and, you know, those that love gaming. Just share this content and hopefully this will help us out to get like a whole new audience, man. So head over to GamerTagWare.com or you can find us also Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and other podcast directories. And we have a lot of things to talk about for this episode of GTR.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
I was online on Twitter and I see a tweet from Paris that is said about Red Dead Redemption requires 105 gigs to install, and you see him like a image of him like fainting and stuff, and I was cracking up. I'm like, no, it can't be real. This can't be real. Yo, I looked it up. It's official. It's 105 gigs, and this is just to start, because a lot of the games it will start like maybe 70, you know, 70 gigs or so, and then through time, once they have like more content, you have to download it and you know it's going to be way more than 105 gigs. So what are your thoughts about this, man? Like Red Dead Redemption 2, which I'm excited, but man, it is freaking scary that this game is 105 gigs.
But is it really surprising?
No.
In 2018, I mean, we're talking open world experiences. We can't think of these as linear type video games such as Horizon Zero Dawn, where you have a finite amount of space, or God of War, or, you know, any other game. We saw how PUBG is only like 13, 16 gigs or whatever. When you start venturing into the 4K, HDR, you know, those realms, you're talking about hundreds of gigs of assets. You know what I mean? Or, you know, hundreds of megs of assets, some audio files. I mean, when we saw what happened with Titanfall, the original, it was like 70% of that was actually audio files because they didn't compress them. But like Wave or FLAC, if they're using that, or even MP3s for their audio files, we don't know. Video assets, plus all the coding behind it, just for the base game itself, not to include Red Dead Online. You know, so that whole thing has to have some kind of supporting directory of files and format and whatnot. There's going to be so much content on this that, yeah, when you start looking at large form games such as this, Witcher 3 and things like that, those style games, that's when you start hitting that 80-100 gig mark easily. And don't expect it to go any shorter moving forward. I mean, unless technology from a video or audio file perspective start to grow and expand into higher compression while still retaining their fidelities. That's why I mentioned FLAC earlier, because everybody loves WAV files because they're uncompressed and they sound phenomenal, but they take up so much space. So when, you know, not trying to divert too much from the conversation, but with video files, a little bit different. So until they find a way to highly compress without affecting the fidelity of the video files, you're going to start seeing, you know, you're going to see installs of 100 gigs easily, especially moving forward in order to support 4K and HDR and all that.
Well, you also got to understand too that there's the consoles that don't have 4K. I feel like, is it fair for those people that don't have consoles that is 4K? Should they even get this amount of file size too? Because I think like, all right, let's say you have the Xbox One X, right? You need to download these games, like the new updates, if you want to get the enhanced version because it's 4K, right? Now, let's say you have the original Xbox. Should you also download 105 gigs though, Mac? Because you're not getting 4K at all. So what is the purpose of those that don't have the new consoles? They have the original PlayStation 4, the original Xbox One. Why they should download a 105 gigs file? Besides the 4K.
You may not have a choice. You know what I mean? Like, in that respect, you may not have a choice. Like, at least they're giving you this advance notice of 2 months prior to launch that, hey, start clearing out some of those unused, unnecessary files from your console. But it's going to become commonplace moving forward, where 5 years ago, 50 gigs was mind-blowing. You know, 50, 60 gigs was mind-blowing. 80 to 100 gigs, that's going to be common. That I think it's going to be commonplace moving forward because people want to start. And I think this puts it more on the shoulders of the developers or the publishers, to the point that I think gamers and consumers have argued enough in the past about having to unlock content in a game post-launch when it's already there, as opposed to it being an updated file. You know how like developers or publishers will unlock a bonus feature if you pay like the season pass. If that's already included in there, why should we be doing that? And that's a totally different conversation that we can have. We can do this now, or we can do this at an after show. But if the content is already there, you know, just let it go at the beginning of the launch. But going back to the thing, I mean, we've seen how hard drives, the price of hard drives has dropped dramatically. You can buy 2-3 terabyte, 2-4 terabyte, you know, external hard drives that you can connect to your consoles for, you know, less than $100. You know, I have a 3 terabyte on my Xbox One. I have a NAS in my living room for my media center with 20 terabytes. It's not that much if you think about it in the grand scheme of things. So now think of that from a perspective of video games. Man.
Yo, let me tell you this.
Check the tech deals channel. Check the tech deals channel in the GTR Discord. You'll see those deals all the time.
Yo, I feel so bad for those that have a data cap, monthly data caps.
Yeah.
This one game is probably going to be like half of your data cap.
That's 10% of it. Yeah. Most of them are like 1 terabyte. Most are 1 terabyte. Yeah. So yeah, that's 10%.
Yeah. But there's probably people that still have like maybe a 300 gig monthly data cap type, you know? So, but I think I'm going physical for this, like for this game, I'm going straight up physical. I'm going to go and buy it at the store, man, instead of downloading it.
Why?
I just feel like Okay, my hard drive is getting really full, man. You and still I have a 4 terabyte.
But you still have to install it to the hard drive. What's the difference?
I know. No, it's okay. All right, it's okay. Besides the installation, I just don't want to wait. The other day I downloaded the Halo Master Chief Collection, the new version update and everything, and it took forever to download that, man. That was, I forgot how many, I can't remember the file size of that, but it was a lot. Also, Forza was a lot. Forza Horizon 4, Assassin's Creed Odyssey was a lot. Just imagine Cyberpunk, Pete, when it comes out in the future. I doubt that game is going to be less than 100 gigs. I think it's going to be way more than that, man.
I would not be surprised.
It might be even more. It might be more than Red Dead Redemption, man. I think so, man.
Well, I would venture it to 120, 150 easily by that time. I don't know. I know I'm breaking the fourth wall here, and I know somebody mentioned 200.
200 for...
Hey, I'm on PC. Give it to me. Give it all. Give me all them gigs.
Yeah, man. I don't know, man. It's just crazy, man. The whole... These files are getting... It's getting scary, man. Dude, do you remember a time where... Every time they had a new game for the Xbox Live Arcade, it used to be like, it had to be like at least 500 megabytes or less. Do you remember that, Pete? Back in the early 360 days.
Oh, yeah.
And I was surprised how many games came out pretty good for 500 megs and less. I was like, oh, damn. And then they were like, you know what? Screw it. Let's go all out. Then it was like 1 gig. I'm like, oh, man, it's getting big, man. Years later, 105 gigs.
Oh my god! Oh yeah!
Insane.
Oh, yeah. Well, man. Yeah. Like, I mean, you figure Blu-ray and dual density, and you know, all of those drive types. That's 50 gigs, 50, 52 gigs, 54 gigs. I think for dual density Blu-ray drive. Mm-hmm. You figure that's what these games are sitting on, anyways, when they come at you. So, I mean, I still don't understand why you're going to go physical. At the end of the day, you still have to install it to your hard drive. You just need the disc and the drive to spin it up to unlock it and play. So at that point, you might as well just install it. What's the deal? What's the difference?
Here's the positive thing about installing disc versus downloading it. It's going to be a lot faster to install it for me instead of waiting to download the game.
Well, I think that's where
just my opinion.
I think that's where the preload comes in handy. If you have a preload,
I agree.
Then you're ready to go. You just have to download the update file, and you don't have to worry about it as long, again, you just got to keep that disk in the drive. And that's one of the reasons, I mean, welcome to lazy 2018, right? Welcome to lazy Americans 2018, because with the download, you don't have to put the disk in the drive. You just press go. Like, when I want to play, you know, Spider-Man 4, it's digitally downloaded. I don't have to do anything. Yeah. I just press go on the controller, turn on TV, and play. I don't have to go and look for the disc and, you know, put it in. Oh, I left another disc in there. Let me take that one out, put that one away, and I got to put this. Nah, press play and go.
Well, actually, this games that, let's say you buy the physical version. Let's just make believe. I can't remember. I know there was one that this situation happened. So you buy the game. You install it. You try to play, and it says, oh, there's an update. You're like, oh, okay, I'll update it. 16 gigs extra. That happens too. With other games too, it's like, oh man, crap. But besides the whole gigs, file size, and everything, this game supports up to 32 players online.
Yep,
for Red Dead Redemption 2. That's dope. I'm very curious to see how the whole online process is going to be like with this game. Is it going to be similar to Grand Theft Auto? Is it going to be a little bit different? You know. I'm excited to see.
I think it's going to be very similar to what you see in Grand Theft Auto online, simply because it's the same formula. We've seen it with other developers and publishers, like Ubisoft's probably the primary example. You've seen how they handle a lot of their content follows the same formulaic method, right? And so apparently it works, because GTA Online is one of the top grossing games still, it's 5 years after release. They're still blowing up like gangbusters. So
still making money. Yeah. Still making money.
So why not? You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Hell, I think I just posted in Discord the other day that I had found a video. Somebody had made a mod of GTA Online using the Predator. down to using does the laugh. It does the nuclear the little mini nuke that he launches. Like he was, you know, weapon select. He throws the spear. He had the shoulder. Everything. You're going to see crazy zaniness just like that on art. I want to play the Predator in the wild, wild west, having people running away in horses, and I get to go chase them and shoot the net and throw my spear. Hell yeah, I want that.
Nope. All right, but let's go to the next topic here. I was very surprised about this news because the last conversation I had with Paris on, was it episode 798? Mm-hmm. We were talking about XO and PlayStation experience coming up and so on in December. Sony announced that there's not going to be no PlayStation experience for this year. What are your thoughts about that, man? Do you think that was smart for them not to have it? Because I heard bad reviews about last year's event. Was kind of... Yeah, not the hands-on part, but more of the press conference that they usually have, like the first day. It seemed like it was very boring, and a lot of people didn't like it. So I don't know if that has something to do with it, but maybe they're just saving up for the next big thing for PlayStation. You know, like they don't need to. I think they don't need to do no PlayStation experience, man. They're doing really good with, you know, all the games that have been coming out this year, especially like the exclusives. The console's number one. What is the point of them having a PlayStation experience? I can see why Microsoft is doing it, but PlayStation, I think they're good, man.
So we go back to PlayStation Experience 2017. Mostly gameplay of already announced games. We fast forward E3 2017. Not a lot in the form of brand new announcements. Showed a lot of gameplay of games we had already seen. Obviously highlighted by Spider-Man, which has already come out. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just don't have anything to unveil. Or I know, remember last year at the last PlayStation experience, Sean Layden mentioned, oh, by this time next year, you'd be able to change your name. Maybe they're canceling it because it's not going to be available. We promised name changes in PlayStation Network last year, where since we can't deliver, we're not going to have, no, I'm kidding. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe they just don't have anything worthwhile to reveal. And obviously it's going to fuel speculation that maybe they're working on PlayStation 5. They don't want to touch it, you know, because that's going to mean people are going to start asking questions. And if they don't want to show their hand or tip their hand in any way, shape, or form, maybe this is the reason why. Who knows? Obviously, we don't sit in those boardrooms, but their major blockbusters have already been released for 2018, right? Do they have anything else really coming out for 2018?
That's it.
So, unless they drop, you know, something mad super exclusive that they haven't announced, which they're not going to do because Sony obviously has a monster marketing budget, you know, maybe it's time to hold back, go back into the lab and start chopping up stuff for 2019, because they do have a lot of things coming up. You've got Dreams, Days Gone, you've got Death Stranding, which still nobody knows what the hell is all about, Ghost of Tsushima, Last of Us 2 are all waiting. Those are all coming soon, and I'm using air quotes. Maybe they're just sitting back in the lab and just saying, okay, what do we do for 2019? Who knows? Maybe they drop a PlayStation experience before E3. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's another game that I want to talk about, and I know you were the only one that got hands-on to play this game, Hitman 2.
Oh yes,
it's officially gone. It's already gold.
Nice.
Now this takes place in Miami. Shout out to the 305.
Ah.
So Pete, like for those that don't know much about Hitman, Hitman 2, how was your experience playing this game back at E3? Because it's coming out soon.
Actually, it releases on my birthday, November 13th. So go pick up Hitman 2.
Perfect timing. You were there. Honestly, Pete, you were there for like a good 30, 45 minutes playing this.
Well, the whole mission that we put, that we were playing there, it's pretty interesting. It was different. And it kind of reminded me a lot of playing a Metal Gear Solid game. Because there's a lot of options and opportunity when you're playing a game like that, simply in the fact that there were many ways to get to the objective that I needed to do, which was either I had to find a key pass to be able to get through the doors, had to go through the VIP area, had to, you know, poison or drug the guy that I was chasing. But you could do that in several ways. You can go in guns blazing, which doesn't help because you're supposed to be a hitman, you're supposed to be silent, you're supposed to be deadly. And so, like, you would go in, knock out, you know, a cook, throw him in a freezer or a fridge, change clothes, and then next thing you know, you're walking out with your typical bald head and the barcode in the back of your head, but you're walking around as a server, or you're walking around as a cook. And then you get to the area, you know, you go to, like, in the gameplay session that I did, had to go get the clothes, get the pass from the security guard, get to the kitchen, and then, like, poison a bad guy, get his pass, go back to, because it was in a car, it was in a race in Miami, and then you had to go down into the pit to booby trap a vehicle of the actual target that I was originally set up to kill. So there was a lot of different paths and ways that you had to go, you know, to get to these things. And, you know, the whole hiding stealth mechanic really, really reminded me of a game like, whether it be Splinter Cell or Metal Gear Solid, because you're always, you know, you're aware of your surroundings, and then you have to, like, you have to do little stealth moves to get to your objective. I really enjoyed it. So yeah,
that's dope.
And so maybe that's because I hadn't played a game like that in a while. Maybe because it harkened back to that Splinter Cell stealth type gameplay, or those, you know, those Metal Gear Solid games where you're always hiding and you know, the whole stealth mechanic, I think, is missing from a lot of games. The required stealth mechanic, I think I'll quantify that statement, you know, because a lot of games just give you the option to go in and guns blazing. And if that works for you, fantastic, but it's not a requirement for you to be completely stealthy the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why they got to bring back Splinter Cell, man.
Yes.
The first game that started that.
If you work at Ubisoft and you're listening to this podcast or you're watching the Twitch show, please release.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
Wink.
Nod, nod.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to play this interview that I recorded with Universal Studios, Pete. They were talking about Horror Nights. You could check it out in Orlando or in Los Angeles. And the reason why, first of all, they contacted us, they invited us to go to the park, but I couldn't go, Pete couldn't go. So I was like, let's do it over the phone, man. Let's record this. And it was cool. The conversation, because we talked about, the haunted houses, the, you know, Stranger Things. And I think the Stranger Things, when they have, arcades from like the 80s, we talked about that. And also, previous haunted houses where they had Resident Evil and other video game themed haunted houses. So listen to this interview right here. And once we come back, we have more topics and also fan mail here on GamerTagRadio.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
This episode of Gamertag Radio is sponsored by Nighthawk Pro Gaming from Netgear, rated 2018's top performing gaming router by PC Gamer and IGN. There's no question that online gaming demands a stable and low latency connection. Running multiple connected devices will cause network congestion that most gateways simply can't handle. Switching your existing gateway or router to a Netgear XR500 gaming router will improve your online connectivity. It's the easiest way to improve your online gaming experience, and it has the biggest impact. You shouldn't have to compete with other online devices for bandwidth. Save the competition for the game. The XR500 router creates an express lane just for your gaming to give you incredible speed and no lag. With this high-performance gaming router, you have complete control over your gaming experience. The XR500 is purpose-built to lower your ping, stabilize your connection, and help you game at incredible speeds. Keep your game alive with features like geo-filtering, traffic prioritization, and device management. The Nighthawk Pro Gaming Router transforms your gaming experience and gives you the power to win. Visit netgear.com/NPG and learn how you can join the no-lag crew.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
Hey, Charles Gray. I'm a show director for creative development here at Universal Studios Orlando.
All right, man. First of all, how long you been part of Universal Studios and working on this in the past previous Horror Nights?
I've been a show director for since HHN 23. But I've worked
for
25 years.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Well, I know in the past you guys had like some video games, because our podcast is a video game podcast, but I know you guys had previous haunted houses that was like, I think Resident Evil. I know you had a Walking Dead and so on. And this year, I know there's a couple new ones here, but one that got my attention the most is Stranger Things. There's a couple people already that went to Horror Nights, and there, I believe there's like a section where you guys have like 80s arcades and everything, right? How was the process of getting like the right stuff that's related to Stranger Things, especially our arcades?
Yeah, working with Netflix, they're very particular, which we are too, about the detail, and so we most definitely went through a fine tooth comb trying to find, you know, making sure that everything was a date accurate in the house, and then including when you go into the cabin, you'll see a lot of the VHS tapes are from, you know, the early 80s, and I think we even made up some fake books, novels that are in there. So, yeah, we're all fans of those, like, you know, those early 80s games too.
Awesome. I mean, what was there any challenges also working on other haunted houses and also this one too?
There's always different challenges for each house, most definitely. But each one's its own. Own house and presents its own challenges. We for example, in Poltergeist, we weren't sure exactly how we were going to bring this to life. We went through in the first half of the house, we really did check all the boxes of the things that you know from the film, but then where do we go from there? And so we accepted the challenge of going into the light, going to the other side through the closet and really telling the story of what's happening on the other side. But each house is very different in that way. Stranger Things, again, the detail, the amount of detail, how are we going to get the Demogorgon to look, how are we going to make him attack, how do we do that while also letting the character, one, be able to see, comfortable, safe, and so all those elements always played into that also.
Can you explain a little bit about Horror Nights and also what are the new things that we're going to get to see this year?
Absolutely. This year is bigger than it's the biggest event we've put on so far. We have 10 haunted houses. 5 of them are original stories that we've created and 5 are intellectual properties such as Stranger Things, Poltergeist, some of Blumhouse films like Happy Death Day, Halloween 4, and then, of course, Trick or Treat, which is a huge fan favorite for us. Along with that, we have 5 scare zones in the streets, really kind of like 5.5 because we have these roaming chainsaw hordes that'll chase you down during the night. And then we also have an amazing show with Academy of Villains, and they're kind of 80s theme is cyberpunk. So it's a huge event. We turn the daytime park over in less than an hour and turn it into one of the most intense and scary and fun events in the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know previous years, I know there was one year that you guys combined both Islands and Adventures and Universal Studios into one Horror Nights. I like the experience. Maybe for others, maybe it was just too big, right? Was there a reason to change? Why not go back to that or just keep it at Universal Studios every year?
Well, I could speak for myself. That was a lot of walking.
It was.
Turning the whole part, just keeping it contained in one part, which it's barely contained because there's so much to see and do here. But I think the park itself has a really nice, almost like a flow to it. So whether you start on the other side of the park with our tents or start by the sound stages, you can really get a nice flow to the evening. Especially if you come multiple nights, you can kind of get the feel of where you want to start and then where you want to end up. For example, the streets in New York, which is Vamp 85, is really this really fun, immersive Vampire Attack in the 80s. There's all the music from 1984 playing. There's a New Year's Eve ball drop there, but a lot of people love to hang in that zone. Along with Killer Clowns from Outer Space, it's a smaller zone, but people are just hanging in there, having a good time, communing with the Killer Clowns.
Yeah, quick question about this, man. Like, because, you know, you guys always have new haunted houses, new themes. How you guys come up with the idea? Like, okay, this is the right haunted house for this year. How that works? Is it companies approaching you guys, or is more Universal Studios coming with the idea and approaching the company? How that works?
Yeah, when it comes to intellectual properties, it's kind of both. Sometimes we, as fans, because our creative team, we call ourselves geeks, you know, we're like, we freak out about these things too, like Stranger Things, we're all like, oh my gosh, we got Stranger Things. But yeah, sometimes we're approached, sometimes we approach them. But when it comes to original content, we kind of see how everything's playing out. And since we have 10 houses, you know, if there's something that scares you, like werewolves or vampires, zombies, for me, it's creepy kids, whatever it might be, there's something for everybody in the event. So we really try to make sure that we have a lot of diversity in scares and characters.
Yeah. What is the best part about working your job? Your favorite part about working the Horror Nights every year?
That I get to create the things that I would want to see as a fan. You know, you talked about video games. I mean, if you're like a huge gamer and you could get to create games, it's that kind of thing. If you're a musician and you love music, it's that, you know, it's just being involved in those things. I love horror movies. I love to be entertained. I like the idea of walking into your favorite scenes out of a film, and that's what we get to recreate here. I helped create the Poltergeist house, but I was geeking out, you know, walking through something. I already knew what it was going to be, but just to be there physically is so much fun.
Yeah, and I think the best part, too, is seeing the people scream and freak out, right, at the haunted houses.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool, too.
Man. Yeah, there's some people who they come multiple nights, and, you know, after you've seen all the content, they just chill out in the streets and watch other people get scared. That is totally entertaining.
Yeah. Well, no. So tell us the dates, when it's going to start and when it's going to end for Horror Nights. People would like to check it out at Universal Studios.
Absolutely. We started on September 14th, and we go all the way to November 3rd. So it's more nights than we've ever had before. It's a lot of fun. And I got to tell you, I always push people coming multiple nights. The other thing, too, is we don't repeat any houses. So if you miss this year, you'll never see it again. So we try to get people come every year.
Yeah, that's what happened to me, man. I missed out Resident Evil. I know you guys had it. I completely missed it out, but I'm not missing Stranger Things this year, man. I'm definitely going to go, man. So, but I just want to say thanks for the interview, and I can't wait to check it out, man. This year's Horror Nights 2018.
Absolutely. It's so good to talk to you, man.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
Playground Games, they're hiring 177 developers for a, and I quote, new AAA open world RPG. If you listen to my Forza Horizon 4, I talked about that. Like, you know, Forza Horizon 4 to me is one of the greatest racing games I ever played, man. I thought 3 was like the top. This surpassed it. And during the review, I mentioned that they are getting better and better when it comes to like open world designs and activities and missions and all that in the Forza Horizon series. But imagine if they could pull something off like this, but now RPG style, which is Fable, I think. And we've been talking about this now for a while. That's the rumor that they're working on a new Fable game. And I think it's good, man, because I think that Lionhead was still stuck in the whole same design, same concept, but having a new developer that they have probably tons of different ideas, yo, I could see them putting this off, man, making some great, great open world RPG, man. What you think about this, Pete? If the rumors are true.
I know this is something you or Paris had alluded to a couple of months ago, maybe earlier in 2018, about playground games. Potentially doing, you know, or taking over the whole Fable stuff because they're based in the UK, and just a lot of the little hints and stuff all like seem to tie back. I think there's also talk about potentially doing the Berserk manga from Japan, which came out like originally in 89, which I think has a really cool storyline. I'd love to see maybe that turn out to be what we're looking at. It's interesting. I'm excited because I know between the initiative and all the other developers, the other studios that Microsoft has, you know, announced back at E3, they need something big. They need something that's going to drive attention towards the Xbox brand. And I think Fable probably is going to be the one that everybody is going to jump out with first, because that's the one title that they were hoping to have in 2018, 2019. That rumor got shut down. Obviously, we heard that the studio got shut. Peter Molyneux got the boot.
Yep. I remember those days.
I think it's probably time for a title like Fable to start coming back, because I mean, who knows, maybe we'll see Rust all over again, right? Yeah. Isn't that the not Rust. What was the game that you wanted that you've been wanting to get back? Dust, sorry. Is it Dust?
Dust. Oh, by Phantom Dust?
Is it Phantom Dust? Yeah. Maybe, who knows? Maybe they'll be doing Phantom Dust. Who knows?
Yeah. But, yeah, well, was a Japanese developer that worked on that.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying from a title, from a Big Bang news, I think Fable 4 would be the one thing that everybody's going to want to capitalize. And I think that's something that Microsoft would obviously have a leg up, as at least from a lore, from a story, from a, you know, something that they could jump start the hype machine for an Xbox title, which again, we've talked about countless times here on the show. They need exclusivity titles. They need titles that are going to draw people to the Xbox ecosystem, not the console, the ecosystem, because the ecosystem is what's going to drive people towards the Xbox brand. Cause whether you're playing it on Xbox on your PC, where you're playing it on your console in your living room or wherever, that's where Microsoft wants you. So that's where they need to drive people, drive them towards your ecosystem.
You know what, Pete? The Xbox 360 had so many RPG games, man. Some great exclusive RPG games, some that was available also for all consoles. But I feel like Xbox One, this generation, they haven't been like a lot of RPGs compared to like the 360 days, man. And I think, especially first party, because if you think about it, if you go back to the 360 days, yo, they had Blue Dragon, they had Lost Odyssey, they had a couple good RPG games, man. Some from Japan, some from like Europe and other places, and they need to step it up, man, Microsoft. And I think Fable is the game that they could bring that back to like the Xbox brand. So having it as an online RPG, oh my God, imagine. Similar to like Phantasy Star Online, maybe a little bit of Destiny, you know, when it comes to like activities and live events. And man, they could put it off, I think, man. Definitely. And I think they will bring back, I think a lot of the Xbox fans will go back to the console just because of that, man. Because PlayStation has been great, man, when it comes to like RPGs, man, every generation. Xbox, it took a while for them to do that, man. And I think they did a pretty good job during the 360 days, but now it's kind of lacking, man, with this generation, man. So, and I know you're not an RPG guy, but you got into an RPG game like The Witcher, right? Little bit different than the previous
RPG games. I mean, all right. So I think we need to quantify this. A game like The Witcher can draw me in. A game like a JRPG, I won't touch it.
That's not for you.
That's not for me. Right. I will not. I won't even bother I won't even spend it. I won't even offer to review it.
because I will not enjoy it. JRPG. I love JRPG. And if Mandy, if you're listening to this, we could review it together, because I know she's also into the whole JRPG, man. You know, and even my brother, man, we could definitely like sit down and just talk about it for like hours, man. I love that, you know. So, but yeah, if you're listening to this, let us know your thoughts about this rumor, open world RPG game. Let us know your thoughts and send us feedback and comments and voicemails and all that. We'll play it on the show here. All right, so we should now have some fan mail, Pete, right? That's, we should definitely do that. All right, it's time for fan mail.
Fan mail at gamertagradio.com.
All right, so we have emails, we have voicemails. Which one we should start first, Pete? I have a couple emails here.
I mean, I'm ready to go, so if you want, we can play voicemail. I think I'm going to play this.
Well, all right, go with the
voicemail. Go,
I have an email here I want to read.
Okay, I'll play them in order. So here we go, voicemail number one.
All right, let's go for it.
What's going on, fellas? This is Jacob giving you guys a call from Charlotte. Quick question. What are your guys' thoughts on asymmetrical multiplayer games? I know the last, like, AAA one that came out, if I'm not mistaken, would have been Evolve. But I'm kind of hooked on them. You know, like the horror type kind. I've been playing the Dead by Daylight, the free game we were given last month on PlayStation. Prior to that, I was playing Friday the 13th. Loads of fun, especially if you're playing with your friends. Do you guys think that any like big studios might get into that? Do you think we might see that be the next new thing? Because like right now, I guess Battle Royale is the new thing. Or do you think that Fallout has it right?
So yeah, sorry, his voicemail cut off early, so I don't know what happened there.
Yeah.
So. I had to make sure I had to watch that one. Asymmetric video games, Dying Light really, really did it well, in a sense.
Yeah, Dying Light.
Oh, you know,
yeah.
They've got Dying Light 2 coming out now next year, yeah. I believe. So I would say look out for that. I know Mandy, she's in the chat. Her and David had been playing that one pretty hard for the last couple of weeks as well. I mean, obviously, Left 4 Dead / those are fun games. Evolve had a great mechanic and a great concept. I just think it might have been ahead of its time.
It's very repetitive, man, that game.
But that's
why I think a lot of people left, man. They got tired of it, I think.
But if you think about it in the grand scheme of things, how is it any different from a Left 4 Dead?
That's true.
You know what I mean?
Now, do you consider Shadowrun as that? Or not really?
I don't know if I would.
No? Okay.
No.
Just in case.
No. I just don't. I don't think it fits the concept of an asymmetrical, multiplayer game. I'm trying to think of another game. I guess you could call Counter-Strike an asymmetrical.
Yeah. Yeah, I could.
Because the map never really changes. You're always on the same map.
I agree. Totally agree with that.
I don't know, but hey, again, there's nothing wrong with them. I mean, we saw the success of Dying Light. We saw how everybody exploded in excitement with Techlin and Dying Light 2. So, I'm looking forward to it.
They should bring back Left 4 Dead, man, for sure. Should definitely bring that. That game was awesome, man.
Can they do anything else with that though? I mean,
don't you think
that genre might be just a little played out now?
No, but. You know what's played out when everybody does Battle Royale? It's too much. Everybody
when they
has
do it well.
Freaking Battle Royale.
When they do it well, does it make a difference?
No. I don't know. I just feel like it's good to do new things, man. Look, in order for the industry to grow, when it comes to like creating games, creating content from content creators, we need to do different things, man. If everybody's doing the same exact thing just because it's like the new hotness right now, we're never going to grow, man. It's the same freaking thing over and over and over again. So by the time that Left 4 Dead came out, there was nothing like that, man, at that time. That's why it was so big, man. That's why so many people bought that game, man. So, yeah, they could release something similar to that, but change it up. Make it 2018, 2019 version now. You know, like something different, but the same type of vibe.
Right.
Know? So, do you have any emails you would like to read? Or
yeah, see, you start talking about them Battle Royale games, boy, and BR ninjas come in, made you cough. They got you. Yeah. You got to be careful.
I know, man. They're like, what did you say about us? What?
Quick shank. Dear Gamertag Radio, I'm a longtime listener and this is my first time reaching out. You guys do a very good job, very great job on your podcast. I look forward to listening to each episode on my long commute to work and sharing the love for games with my friends and coworkers. A year ago, I sustained an injury in the gym. It has been a reoccurring pain down my lower back, hip, and leg. To help cope with the pain and combat depression, video games have really helped me the past year. I have not been able to play with my two little boys or live an active life post-injury. And the memories and experiences we have made from playing old school games like Mario 64 to Nintendo Switch Mario Odyssey, it has been a lot of fun. I want to thank you guys so much for giving us gamers a chance to experience new game titles. With such a tight budget on finances, it's been hard to save money towards new games. Today was my big day at finally overcoming this injury by having surgery and hitting the recovery road hard. I listened to your podcast and on my way home from the hospital, I listened to your podcast on my way home from the hospital. It was episode 795. Once the code was announced for Assassin's Creed Origins, I quickly pulled up my Xbox app. After inputting the code into my phone, I was in absolute shock. My eyes teared up and told my wife that these guys really care about the gaming community. Thank you, GTR, for all you guys do and bringing life into a tough time in my life. Sincerely, Adam.
All right. Shout out to Adam, man. So, thanks for listening to the podcast, man. And congratulations on getting that free game, man.
And Adam, stay tuned. Check your email. If you haven't already seen it by the time you're listening, I'm going to send you a code for Game Pass so you'll have it for a year.
Ooh, wow. So, that is awesome, Pete.
Glad that we here at Gamertag Radio can help. I've been planning on doing this and I had completely forgotten. And so I'm glad that you actually brought up this email. So thank you. Thank you, Adam, for supporting the show and for sending in your email. Really do appreciate it, man. Definitely, good luck on your recovery. Good luck on your recovery. Absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say that too, man. So, and I have more giveaways. Just stay tuned. Stay tuned. I can't say what it is, but stay tuned. Yeah. So, we have other voicemails.
Absolutely. Here we go.
Hey, what's up, Gamertag Radio? How are you brothers doing? I hope all is well for all three of you guys. This is Keon calling from Baltimore. I just wanted to get you guys' opinion on something. I just found out that, I'm sure everybody knows by now, that Sony is making a PlayStation Classic, which is going to include 20 original PlayStation games. One of those being Final Fantasy VII and various others. But my question to you guys is this. It looks like Nintendo has actually got the ball rolling with this thing. So I wanted to know if you guys could bring back a system and have it replicated, as these minis are or the classic is going to be. What system would that be? For me, I would love to see a TurboGrafx 16 replica, because the TurboGrafx had some amazing games and even a possible Neo Geo as well. But that's it for me. I just wanted to get you guys' opinion on that. And will any of you guys be picking this up? As always, guys, you guys are amazing. And with that being said, you guys take care and have a good day. Bye-bye.
What would you say, Danny? I'm curious to see what you would say.
Yo, come on. Come on. Really? Really? Sega Dreamcast. I've been saying it for years, man. I'm done. I know that we might see a Nintendo 64, which I'm not going to get it. Maybe some GameCube. Not going to get it. I think I'm done with the Nintendo, old school Nintendo. I think Nintendo, the original Nintendo and Super NES, best consoles for me. I collect those. I'm good. I need a Sega Dreamcast, man. yo, Sega, make it happen. I don't care about the Genesis. I don't care about Sega Saturn. I want Sega Dreamcast. That's all I want. That's all I want. HD, maybe have some online features there too, if it's possible. Don't know. But that's what I want, man. Sega freaking Dreamcast. As some Sonic Adventure, Phantasy Star Online. What other games too that we could have in there? Add some Shenmue, Jet Set Radio. Oh my God, I could go on and on. Hey, NFL 2K. Let's do it. Sega Dreamcast, all the way. You, Pete? And don't copy me, punk.
Nah, nobody cares about the game.
Nobody cares.
F you. I'm not one for a lot of... I'm not one for a lot of retro gaming. If I'm going to say one, I'd have to say the Genesis.
Genesis. Okay.
Or the Sega... Was it Sega 64 or whatever? Sega 16?
No. Sega's...
Was it the Genesis?
32X?
The 32X, was it? I don't know. Dude, it's been, dude, we're talking, wow. we're talking what, 15 years, 16 years now?
Yeah, Pete, but plus Sega 64, more. I've never heard of that in my life. what the hell is that? Sega 64
was it the CD thing?
Sega 60? CD.
Yeah, so it would be either that or I'd go further back and I'd say Intellivision 2.
Ooh. That's going way back.
Yeah, dude, the number pad, the whole nine. I mean, and the only reason I would go that far back is because it reminds me of playing with my cousin, you know, back when I was a wee little lad, you know, playing video games and, you know, playing on it. You know, those are memories and experiences that I would love to harken back to. But, I mean, if there's going to be a console, I'd probably say it would probably be that. I mean... Those are good times in my life, and so I would love to be able to bring back to that and say, yeah, let's go back to the days of the Intellivision and go play those games.
You know, I was having this conversation with Mandy the other day because we recorded an episode already. That's coming out later this week. But we were talking about Nintendo 64, right? And we were like, wait a minute, how can we get used to the whole playing first person shooters with just one analog? Like, now I'm so used to playing both, right? Having two, actually. Because I say N64 comes out, they probably will have, you know, Perfect Dark, GoldenEye, and so on. So, yeah, it's going to be very weird playing N64 with just one analog, you know? But I would love to see maybe WCW versus NWO. What's another game too that I would love for them to add in there? Oh, WWF No Mercy. I love those two wrestling games. Those are the best wrestling games ever made, in my opinion, still to this day. Because the wrestling games nowadays is kind of weak, you know. So the only thing, it just looks better. That's it. But yeah, that's what I think about old school consoles, man. So yeah, that's cool, man. Anything else, Pete? We have
have one more. Here we go.
All right, let's do this.
Hey, guys. This is Adam Kerbel from Casper, Wyoming. Just giving another shout-out. I appreciate everything you do. You help my days at work go a lot faster, and I'm glad to be able to listen to your opinions and be able to help make decisions sometimes on what I want to do. Two questions I got for you. I'm going to keep them simple. What is your favorite anime? Mine, of course, is Princess Mononoke. And, of course, currently I've been watching Sword Art Online. Second question I have for you is, have you ever used cheat codes in games, especially in the past when they were available? That's all I got. Anyways, keep it going. You guys are doing great.
Yeah, everybody's used cheat codes. Come on.
Well, you want to answer? Because you can answer the first one. I can't really answer.
So, let me see here. I mean, I'm old, so I'm going to go towards the stuff that I've watched when I was a kid and stuff. Obviously, Akira, Fist of the North Star. Ninja Scroll, mm-hmm. Ghost in the Shell, Vampire Hunter D. Those are animes from my era. There was one that came out about 2 years ago called Your Name that I watched with my wife and my daughter here, and it was actually really, really well done. We could go down the whole line of like TV shows, you know, Dragon Ball Z. Obviously, I'm a huge fan. You know, yeah. I'm a big, you know, big Vegeta fan. So anytime that you're gonna ask me about, you know, Dragon Ball Z, I'm always gonna be in there saying hell yeah.
Yeah, I was like a casual Dragon Ball like fan. Once in a blue, I'll watch it like with my brother. But I was like, yo, I don't understand this, man. What's going on? Story is so crazy, but I could talk about cheat codes. Are you ready for this, Pete? Cheat codes. Now, do you consider this as a cheat? But when Mortal Kombat came out for the Super NES and Sega Genesis, the Sega Genesis version had blood. Super Nintendo, it was like, I think it was like a blue color, kind of like water. Right, but I know if you use the Game Genie, you could convert that into blood. Hmm. Is that considered a cheat code to cheat the system to turn that color into like a blood color? Do you think that's a
for cheat, purposes cheat, of this conversation? I'm just going to go ahead and say yes.
Okay. Well, I used to use a lot of a Game Genie, to get more lives. I think. I'm thinking what other games too. Actually, there were some games that they had like pass codes in order for you to also go ahead. For example, Punch Out for the NES. If you want to play Mike Tyson, you put that, right? And you play against Mike Tyson. Now, another code, the Konami code, which was a very interesting story of that one, the Konami code. That one, for those who don't know, you know, the up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, select start, I think it's like that, right? That started with Contra, and the reason that code came up was the developers had that code for them to test out the game. So they had like I think they had like 30 lives, but that was the code for the offices, like for them to test it out before it goes to retail. They forgot to remove that from the game, and it stayed there. So when it went out to retail, I think it just got leaked out, the Konami code. And this is the days without the internet back then. People were just spreading the word about the Konami code, man. It was either through magazines, word of mouth, so on. So that's how that got created. Another thing too, I remember, is Mortal Kombat 2 or the first Mortal Kombat. There was like certain things you could do in the game, like special moves, fatality, all that. Or if you see like a crazy image pops up out of nowhere from the screen, there were certain things you have to do that it will help you to unlock new things in the arcade game back in like in the early 90s. And that was just straight up word of mouth, man. So that's the power of the gaming community, man. Just spreading the word to their friends, and it just goes around everywhere, man. So do you remember what was your first cheat code, Pete, or anything that you did back then in the early days of gaming for you?
It would have to be that one. I mean, the Konami code on...
Konami code?
I mean, well, and you have to think about it. It first came out in Gradius. It was originally part of Gradius, and then, you know, because that's because the developer was doing a home port of Gradius. And then, funny enough, if you go to Gradius 2, if you tried to put in the code, it would blow your ship up. But if you swapped out the BA with a left and right trigger thing, it gave your ship all the power-ups. So it was kind of like, okay, you remember this, it's not going to work this time, it's going to blow you up. So that was really cool. I mean, I remember Doom having one. Doom having a code. I think Sonic had one as well. Mm-hmm. Sonic the Hedgehog. So I'd say those were probably the ones that I remember the most.
Yo, I don't remember when was the last time I used a cheat code, man.
I mean,
like so long ago.
I don't think
nowadays we barely see that nowadays in these games now, you know? So,
yeah.
Only like strategy guides or Easter eggs, but cheat codes now in 2018, you can barely see that, man. Only the old school games for sure. Because you also got to understand, man, during the early days of gaming, there was no way for you to save these games. you were either leave your system on the next day, continue playing like Ninja Gaiden.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a crazy funny story about Ninja Gaiden. So I was playing this game for hours. I get to the last level and my brother, he was like, this is not now, this is another brother of mine. He was like maybe 2 years old, 3 years old, something like that. He wanted to play the NES. He wanted to play Ninja Gaiden and he started crying. And he basically told my mom that he wanted to play and I didn't want to let him play. I was like, oh my God, I'm in the last level. Please don't do this to me, please. My mom goes, let him play it. I'm like, oh my God, this sucks. Remember, there is no way for me to save this game back in the early 90s.
Right.
I gave him the controller. He was just looking at the screen. And he didn't know how to play. So he was just looking at the screen while he was holding the controller. And no, I'm looking at the time going down. I'm like, oh my God, man. This is not good, man. This is not good. I'm in the last level. Please, I'm trying to finish this game. It was too late, man. I had to start from scratch. It sucked, man. It sucked. Or another time, I'm playing Ninja Gaiden again. Last level, my mom goes, all right, turn everything off. It's time to go to bed. I'm like, oh my God. So I didn't want to get caught that I'm still playing, right? So I left my Nintendo on overnight. Yeah, but what I did, because you know, the console had like a little red light.
Mm-hmm.
So you could notice, oh, that thing is on. And you could see it at night, right? So I got some tape and I cover the red light so my mom wouldn't even see it. So the next day, I got up, start playing the game. I continued to the same level, and boom, I finished. Man.
That's funny.
Yeah, but it was tough back in the days with no games to save. And the only games I think at that time that you could save it was like my first experience saving games was the original Zelda for the NES. Now, once that cartridge got like old, there was a battery inside the cartridge, so you couldn't save anymore. The battery was already dead, and the only way you could save it is you leave the cartridge inside the Nintendo system and don't take it out, and you can still save it. Because remember, you put it inside the Nintendo system, and it's giving power to the battery that because it's still there connected to the system.
Right.
But once you put that out, forget it. Everything is gone. So that's how I managed to finish Zelda back in the days. Also.
Wow.
I know it's not about cheat codes or anything, but just wanted to talk about
cheating
that.
Cheating the system.
cheating the system. Yeah. Actually, man, yeah. And I think, you know what was my first cheat code? I just remember right now while talking to you. So Atari 2600, there was a baseball game, super cheap looking baseball game. By mistake, when you hold the controller, like the joystick, you point it up when you're batting, you could hit home runs, not unlimited home runs. That was my first cheat ever in games for me. Mm. Baseball, Atari 2600, early 80s.
Interesting.
There you go, guys.
There you go.
Yeah, but shout out to everybody calling us, sending us questions and feedback, and shout out to everybody that's been donating. Pete, right? We've been getting donations for your TwitchCon trip.
Yep. Shout out to Tanya, just dropped a $25 dono. Can't wait to see you at TwitchCon. Yep. So raise money to offset the cost of going to TwitchCon because a trip like that is not free. And
it's
so
very expensive.
anything our listeners can do, just head on over to donate.gamertagradio.com or click on the donate panel on the Twitch channel if you watch the channel. And again, it's appreciated. All of that goes towards hotel and airfare. You know, everything else that happens while I'm there comes out of my own personal pocket. So thank you very much. If you can. If not, even if it's just subbing to the channel. And speaking of subs, if you've got Amazon Prime, you can use your Amazon Prime subscription towards one channel, one streamer, every 30 days. And again, any of that always helps.
Yep. And go to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com if you would like to support GTR. And we also have a store. So if you want to rock t-shirts, Gamertag Radio t-shirts around your local area, go to store.gamertagradio.com. That's store.gamertagradio.com. We're going to wrap it up here. This was episode 799. We're about to hit 800 later this week, and we're going to have Chris Hopper from Riot Games and also a good friend, Mandy, a.k.a. Lady Luck. She's going to be joining us, and we talked a lot about Nintendo Switch. Just be prepared. It's like a 30-minute conversation about Nintendo Switch. Yeah, that's it. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And until next time, we're out. Take care, yo. Peace. It's time for a GTR giveaway. All right, so right now we have a brand new code here. Hasn't been used. This is Middle-Earth Shadow of War for the Xbox One. Totally free. And here is the code. MDCPMHCCGHTPCXJ69PHY9YTYZ. Enjoy the free game, y'all. Thank you for listening to Gamertag Radio, episode 799. Once again, thank you so much.
Listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Thank you for listening to Gamertag Radio. If you'd like to donate and help us out for future events and more coverage and also better audio equipment, head over to donate.gamertagradio.com. That's donate.gamertagradio.com. Thank you.